We appreciate so very much the invitation to come and be with you in this series of lessons on marriage and family enrichment. We started doing these somewhere around the end of the last century. And so we've gone from New Hampshire to California, from Florida to Kansas, and all across the country with this seminar. This is the first time, though, that I've had such a technical genius as Jeff to fix my slides for me, and I appreciate that so very much. And he has reconstructed this little track that I wrote back in 2005, 10 Suggestions for a Better Marriage. You'll want to pick one of these up. They're in this form right now, and Jeff is working on, and Gary as well, on printing some in a much more colorful format. And so we hope you can pick those up. Please take note of the handsome couple on the cover. And that that picture's 51 and a half years old. That's a picture of us coming down the aisle at our wedding it was on Friday the 13th of August, 1965. So you can do the math. But for this session, we're talking about pointers for parents and grandparents from Proverbs. I believe that Proverbs is really a training manual for parents. And as we look at this section, help for the home is what we call our seminar, because we believe that the home is of vital importance. It's the very foundation of our civilization. It's the parent and not the child of society. And it's likewise the backbone of the church, if you please. Satan knows that if he can weaken the home to that degree, he can weaken the church. And when you have problems in the home, then the church is less effective. People cannot get out and do personal work and reach out to the lost when they're having difficulties in the home, when they're squabbling and when there's strife in the home. And one of the most important things that parents and grandparents can do is the rearing of children. So we have tried to design this seminar to be practical for parents and grandparents in building a Christian home and family, and to bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But before we proceed, a brief word from our sponsor. Now, we have a little commercial message here. You might want to visit our website that we set up in 2003. It's a little out of date because I don't have someone like Jeff to help me go back in and edit it like it needs to be edited. They want the original password that I set up in 2003. And although I have a good memory, it is short. So I haven't been able to edit it properly, but there's a lot of information on our website. And be sure and put the dash in, christian-family.net. Now, pointers for parents and grandparents from Proverbs. Now, I have to put in a little disclaimer. The standards set forth in Scripture and expressed in this lesson are not necessarily those achieved by the one presenting the lesson. Now, I suppose that every gospel preacher could put this kind of disclaimer in before he stands before an audience and proclaims the Word of God. There are standards set forth in Scripture that we strive to reach, and we try to implement. And as we go through this seminar, there are things that I will be telling you that I'm not standing before you saying that I have mastered all of these points. But these are things that we strive for and that the Bible teaches. And you and I need to do our best to live up to what the Bible teaches us to do. Well, welcome to parenthood. Now, as I look over the audience this morning, I can see young people. I can see those who have the snow of many winters upon their roof. And we've got parents and grandparents and some maybe parents-to-be in the future. I see some young people here who are not of marrying age. Pay close attention. You will want to have this information later on. And if you will at least get the point that the Bible is the answer to all of our problems in the home. Now, when it comes to parenthood, we have a very special relationship. Parenthood begins, of course, when the first child is born. So I like to use cartoons in my lessons to illustrate what we're talking about. Bizarro is one of my favorites, and here you have a young couple who is welcoming their first child. And the child, although cannot talk, this is really what they're saying. Have you been sleeping all night, going out after 7 p.m., eating in restaurants? Are you used to clean clothes and furniture, furniture that looks like new? Well, I'm here to change all of that. You know, children are such a blessing, and they're wonderful. When they come into the world, they're sweet and cuddly. They're so charming. But this soon wears off. After a while, it gets to be a real chore taking care of these little ones. And sometimes they can irritate us. Now, Emily and I have three children. Three grown children and five grandchildren. We have a son that's he'll be 49 years old next Friday. But he's mentally handicapped, lives in a board and care home in Arlington, and is about 25 miles from where we live. So he's never been married, never will be married. But we have two daughters, and both of them are married and have children. So we are blessed with some wonderful grandchildren, and we are taking care of them from we help out from time to time. They're in our home nearly every day of the world, so we're still very much in touch with our grandchildren. Our youngest is 4 years old, and the oldest is 16. Well, that gives you a little background, but here's what happens. This lady says to her friend, at some point I stopped wishing for 15 minutes of fame and started focusing on 15 minutes of privacy. Now, those of you with children and grandchildren can relate to this. When you have children around, you forget about privacy, and because they're everywhere at the same time. And our youngest grandchild, I'm convinced, part octopus, because when you hold his arms and legs are going everywhere, and he can reach and get into things faster than you can say Jack Robinson. Well, parenting from Proverbs. Notice Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The book of Proverbs is really a primer on parenting. And if you will take time to sit down and read Proverbs again and again, you notice so many times throughout the book of Proverbs, instruction is given on the role of parents and grandparents and how to rear children and the things that you need to warn children of. So we're going to talk about some of those. We're going to end this series on Wednesday night with a lesson on what children need. And I hope that you're back for that. It's really a summary, somewhat, of the entire series and summing up what children need in order to be successful as Christians and to reach that heavenly home. But notice, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. This is a general rule. It shows us that there is a way that children are to go. There's a right way and a wrong way. Parents, you have a responsibility to teach your children the way that they should go. Grandparents, likewise, with your grandchildren. Your responsibility doesn't end because your children have their own children. You still have a responsibility to those grandchildren. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. So the book of Proverbs is a training manual for child rearing. Too many parents have turned to pop psychology for parenting. On the left side of the screen, you'll notice three ways to instill honesty in children. And you can go on the internet and you can find all kinds of information regarding child rearing. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. You have to bring everything back to the test of the scripture. What does the Bible say? That's the important thing. Now, Dr. Benjamin Spock published his book on child rearing in 1946. It was called The Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care. There are so many parents that picked that book up and began following the instructions of Dr. Spock. Now, this is not Mr. Spock from Star Trek. This is Dr. Spock. Sometimes our young people, they just hear Spock and they think, oh, well, what did he have to do with child rearing? Well, Mr. Spock didn't have anything to do with it. But Dr. Spock, who, by the way, was a bachelor, never married, never reared any children, published this book, and a lot of people bought into this no spank theory. And so you have really a couple of generations reared on this. Now, 1946, I grew up in the 50s, graduated from high school in 1961. So the sexual revolution was just getting started. We had all the hippie movement in the mid-60s. Now, who are these kids? Well, Spock wrote his book in 1946. I was 3 years old at that time. Thankfully, my parents didn't buy into that particular theory, but a lot of parents did. And what was going on in the 60s? Well, you had your hippie movement, you had the anti-establishment movement, you had these young people throwing fits in the streets of America, and basically going against the establishment. When I was in high school even, I do not know what this was all about because I wasn't in on it. But there were a group of students marching around campus with signs saying, down with the administration. You know, they were objecting to some action that the school administration had taken, some disciplinary action against one of the football coaches. And so, here the marching and the demonstrating. Well, you had all of this going on in the 60s. Now, where are all of those hippies that were reared on this no-spank Spock theory? Well, they're in Congress. You know, they're running our country. They're in the judiciary. They're all over the place. We've got that philosophy is permeating our society. Well, here's a date for you. 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee. All right, testing your knowledge of history. What does that bring back? Now, don't get me started on what they're not teaching in school these days. One thing they're not teaching is American history. And when it's taught from a leftist viewpoint because the leftists have pretty well taken over the schools. Now, there are some exceptions. My wife is a retired school teacher, and she taught in the primary grades, first, second, third grade. She's taught in all of the primary grades, but she liked first grade the best. But she taught these children. She wasn't into teaching American history. But nonetheless, there are a lot of good teachers. I'm not trying to denigrate every teacher, but the fact of the matter is that our schools have been overrun with leftist thinking. Well, 1925, Dayton, Tennessee, you have the Scopes trial. John Scopes was a science teacher, a high school science teacher in Dayton, Tennessee. 1925, it was against the law to teach the theory of organic evolution in the schoolrooms of America. Well, the American Civil Liberties Union, another leftist organization, approached John Scopes and put him up to teaching evolution in his high school classroom in order to test this law. And so he did, and he was arrested for violating the law. And so it went to trial. The Scopes trial featured Clarence Darrow and Williams Jennings Bryan, locked in a courtroom debate. Now, they came out with a movie, Inherit the Wind, starring Spencer Tracy, which totally distorted the whole thing. But the bottom line is that John Scopes was convicted. and was fined a whopping $100 for violating this law. But it brought evolution to the forefront. And then, the American Civil Liberties Union paid his fine. He went back to teaching evolution. But it changed everything, and it became just the opposite. Everything turned upside down. Then it became against the law to teach biblical creation in the classroom. So from 1925 to this good day is how many years? You do the math. When I do math, I get a headache, so I just avoid numbers. But that's a long time. But we've had a number of years now that evolution has been taught in the public schools of America. So you have children that are reared with this idea that man is not the special creation of God, but he's just another animal. So, you have laws, for example, in California that you cannot, you can't disturb the habitat of a certain field mouse. And if you have a cotton farm out there and this endangered species of field mouse is on your property, you can't plow the soil because you might endanger his habitat. There's a certain fish that spawns in the American River near Sacramento. And although it's a very insignificant little creature, to the evolutionist, he's on the same par with a human being, that we humans have no more rights than these little lesser creatures. So there's a law against certain types of irrigation that might endanger the habitat of that particular creature. Then in Oregon, you have the spotted owl, an endangered species. So the government steps in and says you can't harvest lumber in this particular area because there's a nest of spotted owls up here, and they're an endangered species. Where does all of that environmentalist nonsense come from? It's from the theory of evolution. And it's been around a long time, and it's not easy to get around some of these ridiculous regulations. But they're rooted in this idea that man is no different than an animal. And so when you take God out of the classroom and you substitute the theory of evolution, this is what you get. So in our schools, we have evolution being taught, humanism. Now, humanism, of course, is the idea that man is the measure of all things, that there is no one higher than man. Humanism is just a dressed-up word for atheism. And so you have the American Humanist Society, and you'll go online and find all kinds of humanist organizations. But again, these are basically left-wing, anti-God, anti-American groups that find man to be the problem on the planet, and primarily the United States of America is the focus of problems in the world. Atheism, of course, is wrapped up in all of these isms. One preacher said, all of these isms need to be wasms. We need to get rid of these isms because these are the problems that the home is facing. When you have children that are attending schools that are being fed evolution, humanism, atheism, and such like, you have a problem on your hands. Now, not only from the public schools, but movies and TV. When our children sit down in front of the television, what are they watching? Do you know what your children are watching? What kind of programs are they watching? Our little grandchildren come over, and there's certain programs that they like to watch. There are certain movies that they want to watch. Well, there's sometimes we have to say, no, we're not going to watch that. They've been to one of their friend's house and they, where there are no rules, and they'll come home. Oh, Grandpa, guess what we saw? Oh, Where did you see that? Well, it was on at so-and-so's house. Well, it's not going to be on in our house. Well, you have movies and TV that glorify divorce. They picture homosexuality as being normal and generally make a mock of sin. You know, the Bible says fools make a mock of sin. And that's what you have coming out of Hollywood these days. They're mocking at sin. They make sin to seem to be pleasurable. Sin is to be the normal thing. And unfortunately, the left has been able to pretty well take over the entertainment industry. Just look at the last two or three weeks after the election of Donald J. Trump as President of the United States. All these Hollywood types came unglued, and some of the vile things that they are spewing on television in their marching and in their demonstrating. These Hollywood types that have imbibed the leftist propaganda and spew it out and say such ignorant and offensive things, but they paint marriage, biblical marriage, as being out of the mainstream. If you say anything about marriage being one man, one woman for life, you're called a bigot. You're a homophobe. They have all kinds of names that they want to call you. They have no real argument for the for their position, because there's no standard. So you have movies and television that spew all of this venom against the home. We have that to combat as parents and grandparents. Religion is depicted as radical. The Bible is attacked. Christianity is certainly under assault. And so when you you're sitting in the living room with your children or your grandchildren, what are they watching? And are you paying attention to what they're watching? Notice, whoops, I went a little too far here. Yeah. How do I get back? Okay. Which one of these do I push to get moved backwards, Jeff? While he's coming here to help me, here's the point, Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. Thank you. I just need to go back to that. There we go, right there. Good. Okay, thank you. I got too heavy on my thumb there. Movies and TV, again, here you are with the child sitting in front of the TV. What's he watching? Sex and violence. And he says, "Dad, is it the entertainment industry's fault that I am exposed to this?" And what's father doing? He's in a trance. And he's reading his sports page. And he says, "That's nice, son." Well, I'm afraid this is all too typical. We're not paying attention to what these children are watching. Now, even some of these very innocent little cartoons that are on, and they're, oh, our grandson likes Paw Patrol, and he likes Team Umizoomi. Some of these little programs have some good teaching in them as far as learning numbers and colors, and they have some interpersonal relationships. But every once in a while, you'll see something that's very subtle in regard to the environment or global warming or something of that nature that is just out here just on the fringe a little bit. But let's be careful about what our children are watching and pay attention as parents and grandparents to their programming. Again, public schools, parents oftentimes are not tuned in to what's going on in the public schools. Father says, "They're not teaching you values and social graces. I've got half a mind to go up to that school and punch out your teacher." Well, what kind of example are you setting as a parent? So parents, pay attention. let me encourage you. Now, if you've got your children in public school, I'm not suggesting you pull them out of public school necessarily, but know what's going on. Get involved in the PTA. Go to your child's classroom, and as grandparents, go down to your grandchild's school. If they're where you can, I recognize that some grandchildren are three or four states away. When I was growing up in Southern California, my grandparents were in Midland, Texas, three states away. I think I saw my grandparents maybe a total of four or five times in my entire life because we would go back and visit about every 2 years. Dad would take a vacation, and we would go back, and we spent our vacations in Midland, Texas. Now, if you've ever been to Midland, Texas, you know that it's in the middle of nowhere. They should have named that Nowhere County, but it's Midland, and it's Midland, all right. You have tumbleweeds going down the main street most of the time, and sand blowing, but that was my view of Texas. Nonetheless, that's where my grandparents were. You may have grandchildren in another state. You don't have opportunity to interact with them, but if you do, and certainly you can do this on the phone or in letters. Now we have social media. You might be able to do Skype with them, FaceTime, whatever you might be able to do to communicate with them. Take advantage of the opportunity to instruct and to help them and encourage them to be godly and not to succumb to some of the pressures that they find in school and among their peers. Now, Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap eternal life. Now, let that soak in just a moment. This is God's law. It's a law of sowing and reaping. Now, we understand some of the physical laws. We call them the laws of nature. They're really God's laws. You take a corn seed and you plant it in the ground, and it will reproduce after its kind. That's the way God set up things in the very beginning. You go all the way back to the book of Genesis. Everything reproduces after its kind. Corn comes from a corn seed. Green beans come from green bean seeds, etc., etc. You sow things that are of a fleshly nature, then of the flesh you will reap corruption. Now, we're speaking in spiritual terms now. You put into the heart or the mind of your children or your grandchildren those things that are spiritual. You're going to reap a spiritual harvest. If the sowing is of a material nature, of a fleshly nature, of a worldly nature, you're going to reap worldly and fleshly things. And so this is the law. If you don't like the harvest, then you must change what is being sown. Now, you have to think about that a little bit. Know what's being sown in the hearts and minds of your young people. Now, I have a 16-year-old grandson who is in high school. I don't know what all he's being taught, but I do know what his mother and father are teaching him, and I know that they are active in his studies, and they're very careful to counteract the things that he's being taught in school with biblical teaching. And so they have purchased books that help instruct him in God's ways. And there are materials available that teach just the opposite of evolution and will teach your children and grandchildren how to refute the evolutionary theory. Apologetics Press has a number of good materials that you can access. There are other materials that are opposed to evolution that you can access on the internet. But there's material out there. And you, as a parent and grandparent, need to be aware of those materials and pass those on to your children and grandchildren so that you can change what is being sown in the hearts and minds of your young people into from that which is worldly to that which is spiritual. And if you can do that, you'll be successful in reaping a harvest that is a spiritual harvest. Well, again, the book of Proverbs tells parents what to teach their children. So we're going to look at a few pointers from Proverbs. Now, I'm going to try to leave a few minutes. I usually try to leave about 30 seconds at the end of the lesson so you can ask any question that you want. So I hope we will have that time. But try to pick up on these particular points. And if you don't get them all down, we'll try to get those back to you. But first of all, is respect for authority. The book of Proverbs teaches respect for authority. Notice Proverbs chapter, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. Solomon says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." So here is Solomon saying to his son, these instructions to his son, hear the instruction of your father. Now, children, grandchildren, this is for you. Now, you need to listen to your father. And do not forsake the law of your mother. Now, also, let's pay attention to this. You fathers, you have some instruction to give. This is your responsibility. Mothers, you have a responsibility to lay down the law. So, respect for parental authority begins in the home. And we must get this across to our children that they must respect adults. Our little four-year-old grandson is having to learn this the hard way because the other day at his preschool, he told his teacher no. She asked him to do some simple thing, and he didn't want to quit playing with his toys, and he told her no. Well, he got sent to his mother, who happens to be the church secretary, so she was right there on site. And so he got a spanking there, and then when Grandpa got a hold of him, he didn't get to see Buzz Lightyear for several days. So there are things that you can do as parents and a grandparent to teach respect for parental authority and the authority of adults. You do not say no to an adult. Do you understand that, Daniel? Yes. Well, this poor mother. All right, now give mommy the super glue. You got to keep super glue away from these kids. Have you ever seen a child with super glue? There's the dog, the cat, the camera, the TV. How does he get that TV up there? Well, children are very resourceful. You give them some super glue and you're in trouble. Proverbs 1 and verse 8, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother." And once again, we need to emphasize Proverbs 1 verse 8. Now, I love Dennis the Menace because, you know, when you read the comic strips, you really see what's going on in the world. And here's poor Dennis. He's sitting in the corner. She's not only the judge and jury, she runs the jailhouse too. Yes, mothers. Solomon said, forsake not the law of thy mother. The mother is the sheriff. Mother has to lay down the law. She's, in most cases, she's the one that spends more time with a child than the father. Father's usually off at work. Mothers sometimes work as well. We'll have more to say about that in another lesson. But mothers, you have some laws to lay down. Well, respect for civil authority. Again, that begins in the home. Romans 13, verse 1 says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities." Well, if children don't have respect for parental authority, what do you think they're going to have? Are they going to have respect for civil authority? No, I don't think so. So, beginning in the home, we teach children respect for authority. Secondly, to honor marriage. Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 1, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell, lest you ponder her path of life. Her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Now, what does this say? This tells us that parents need to sit down with their children and warn them about immorality in the world. Look at verse 7. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. There are consequences for your behavior. Stay away from immoral people. Well, in Proverbs chapter 7, the entire chapter, Solomon warns about the immoral woman. We do not have time to read that entire section. But what we're saying is go back and spend some time reading Proverbs. Chapter 5, chapter 7 especially deal with immorality and Solomon's warning against immorality. Now, we all know of Solomon. Solomon was inspired by God to write the book of Proverbs, and what he says is by inspiration. But he could also put a disclaimer at the beginning and say that the principles set forth in this book are not necessarily those achieved by the one who is writing. Solomon violated so many of God's laws and brought real problems into his nation and upon himself. But the book of Proverbs is an inspired volume. And if you will take time to read the book of Proverbs, especially these chapters we've emphasized, I think you'll find that you have a storehouse of information that will help you as a parent and as a grandparent. Thirdly, the book of Proverbs teaches value of honest work. Proverbs chapter 10, verses 4 and 5, for example, poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who acts shamefully. Oh, there's that five-minute warning. All right, we go into our two-minute drill. Again, Lou Ann is one of the strips that I like to read. She's grown up now, but this is from several years ago. But here's Lou Ann, teenager. She's sitting on the couch, bored. I can't believe I'm so bored. Nothing to do. Bored. Well, mother arrives on the scene. She says, Lou Ann, if you're bored, I have lots of chores. Bored? Are you kidding? I have zillions of things to do. I'm just trying to decide where to start. I'll never forget the time I walked through the living room one Saturday morning, and my daughter, who was 12 or 13, Emily will straighten me out on that later, but it makes no difference. She was about Lou Ann's age. She said, oh, I'm so bored. That got my attention. I stopped, and I said, oh, child, I am so sorry that I have neglected your entertainment for the day. Please come with me. I gave her a broom, a mop, and a mop bucket, and I said, you sweep the kitchen floor, and then you mop the kitchen floor, and then you do the hallway, and then when you're through with that, we have windows that need washing, and I'll find something else for your entertainment later on. I never heard her say she was bored again. That ended boredom. Boredom is a lack of imagination. So teach the value of honest work. Teach the value of righteous living. Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. Righteous living builds self-esteem. There's a lot said today about self-esteem and building self-esteem. Nothing builds self-esteem like righteous living. Proverbs 20 and verse 11, even a child is known by his deeds whether what he does is pure and right. Again, Dennis comes home from school and he says, boy, is my teacher ever mad at you for letting me grow up the way I did. Well, it's the parents' fault, all right. But Parents need to teach their children the value of righteous living. And when children do right, I'm so proud of my 8-year-old grandson, because as I picked him up from school one day, and his teacher was out in front of the school, and she stopped me and she said, "I want you to know that your grandson is the most polite and fine student that we have on this camp. He is a wonderful child, and he's gotten 2 awards now in this last year for his citizenship, which includes a yard sign that goes out in front of his house. He's got 2 yard signs out there that he is an exemplary student at Freedom Elementary School. So this is what you do when you train your children properly, then their self-esteem is going to be built. Then you need to exercise discipline. Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. "My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father the son in whom he delights." Discipline for children is security. It's like the walls of this building. These walls provide security for us. Tear down the walls and anyone can invade. Been a lot said about walls lately. I don't have time to go into that, but walls bring security, and discipline show us the boundaries. Proverbs 22, verse 15, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him." So, parents, look, here's little Dennis. He says, "If you're trying to get something into my head, you're working on the wrong end." No, you're not working on the wrong end. That's where discipline begins. And parents and grandparents, you need to exercise discipline. Again, Proverbs 22, verse 6, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, that's the end of this session, but the next lesson will be the Christian home, so stay tuned for further developments. I'm sorry we didn't leave you 30 seconds to ask any question, but we'll be glad to take questions later on. Thank you very much. We'll have a little intermission while the classes are coming in.